Wendy Kopp had an idea. She wanted to borrow a tactic from other industries. If she could convince students fresh out of college to commit to teaching for 2 years in communities that desperately needed teachers, she could really make an impact in education and broaden the perspectives of the young adults before they move into their planned careers. And so Teach for America was born. Today, Wendy has broadened her goals and has formed Teach for All to impact education worldwide. Both of those organizations, though, started from a place of believing in potential.
What united us was a deep sense of possibility, a belief in really the potential of everyone, the potential of the students and families in the communities in which we're working all over the network, and in our own collective potential to actually change things.
Wendy shares how her parents' commitment to her education impacted her, and how local communities, not necessarily federal governments, are at the core of driving change. I'm Andrew Kaufman, and this is The Strategist, presented by the George W. Bush Presidential Center. Welcome to Wendy Kopp, who just received the 2020 George W. Bush Medal for Distinguished Leadership at the Bush Center's Forum on Leadership. So that's one more thing that you have in common with Bill Gates and Bono. Thank you so much for joining us, Wendy.
Thank you for having me.
And back with us again is the great Ann Wicks, the Ann Kimball Johnson Director of Education Reform at the Bush Institute. Ann, thanks for helping out.
Hi, Andrew.
So Wendy, the Medal for Distinguished Leadership is obviously for your just huge role in founding Teach for America and Teach for All that's really helped innovate education worldwide. And your journey began right here in Dallas, just a few blocks from the Bush Center. And so we'd love for you to take us back to those formative years. And did you imagine founding and running two large, really influential organizations? Or was there a teacher that sticks out in your mind? Like, just take us back to those early days.
I really could never have imagined that I would be doing what I'm doing today. My parents were so determined that my brother and I would get a good education. And I think that really led them to kind of move into the Park Cities so that we could go to the Park Cities schools, you know? And I have to say that my senior year in college, I found myself just in a total funk, just searching for what I really wanted to do with my life. And I was very conscious of the fact that I felt that the whole world was open to me, that I could do absolutely anything I wanted to do. And I knew that was because of the education I'd had the chance to attain. And not only at Princeton, but really in those early years. So I'm very grateful for that. If I hadn't had a chance to have such a wonderful, set of opportunities growing up, I don't think I would have understood the kind of transformative power of education. And that's really what inspired this.
We've said many times here that we love talking to optimists. And at the Forum on Leadership, you shared a great story about your optimism, or maybe it was just not knowing any better. But either way, it's a great story. A great origin story for Teach for America. So rather than make you retell it, let's listen to that clip here.
First of all, Princeton had a senior thesis requirement, and I decided to propose this idea in my thesis, and the thesis became a plan for this. And so I turn it in, and my thesis advisor sees this very naive college senior thinks she's going to create this. I mean, had a budget in there saying we needed to raise $2.5 million for year one to recruit 500 people, which I thought we had to get 500 people in year one. So he calls me into his office and he says, do you know how hard it is to raise even $2,500? he introduces me to Princeton's development director to try to explain how outlandish this is. But I said, you know what? I think Ross Perot is going to fund this. I didn't know Ross Perot, but I had grown up in Dallas watching the headlines and watching Ross Perot fight for education reform, and I knew he was such an entrepreneur, and I thought, he is going to fund this. So I wrote him 11 letters, which he disputed. I mean, he told me he always responds the first time, but I was very persistent, and one day he called the office, and I said, I'm coming to Dallas. Can I meet with you? And honestly, by that point, we actually had the 500 people signed up, 2,500 of you know, people responded to a grassroots recruitment campaign. We had all these veteran teachers from urban and rural areas signed up to train them. We had school systems saying they would hire them. And we had raised something like $300,000 towards this $2.5 million goal. And I knew that this was my last chance. And I created an image in my head of myself glued to the chair in his office. I just said, I'm not leaving there until he agrees to give me $1 million. And I went in and literally would not leave. He tried everything, introducing me to his friends. And I said, you know what? I've been down this path. You're the one. And he finally said, I'm sure to finally get me out. He said, I'll tell you what, if you can raise the other $1.5 million, I'll give you $500,000. And I knew that's all I needed because I had met a lot of people and they were all just sitting on the fence. And I knew that vote of confidence. And sure enough, so 1 year after I graduated, I was looking out on an auditorium full of 500, the first 500 Teach for America Corps members. And that's when the journey really began.
So fast forwarding now back to present day, how does your sense of optimism impact your leadership style now, years later?
You know, I mean, one thing that comes to mind, we stepped back as a network, at Teach for All, you know, 5 years ago, I guess, and really reflected on, you know, really when we're at our best, what is at our core. We were kind of refining these kind of core values that unite us as a global network. And one thing that was just most obvious to everyone was that what united us was a deep sense of possibility, a belief in really the potential of everyone, the potential of the students and families in the communities in which we're working all over the network, and in our own collective potential to actually change things. I'm not sure where that came from. I mean, I think I have a deep sense of possibility, but I also think that this effort has just magnetized people now all over the world who share that deep sense of possibility. And I think that really is very core to the ethos and decision-making and really just, you know, everything about Teach for All.
Wendy, you talk, I always think there's leaders who are really good at describing an optimistic vision, and then there's some people who are better at the action part. I think you're famous for being able to marry those two, to sort of match up that optimism with action. Tell us a little bit about how you do that and how that impacts who you might recruit in to be working on this effort with you.
Well, you know, I think it's just kind of in my fundamental nature. Probably I was born in overdrive. I mean, I think about myself as a student at Highland Park High School, you know, just engaged in everything. And the same was true through college. And it's just, it's part of me. I knew, in fact, I was one of the things that went into my thought process around what I wanted to do with my life. My senior year in college, I just realized, you know, I'm going to work 24/7 at whatever I do. And it better be something that makes a real difference in the world. So I don't know. I think it's in my nature, but I also think that this work needs everyone and people whose core strengths are, you know, we need people with lots of different core strengths. And I know mine is, you know, getting things done, persevering, and I can bring that, but I also have to hold back a bit, you know, because I've come to realize that really getting where we're trying to go, you know, we need to create space for many people to contribute. So,
well, one of the things you talked about at Forum, I thought was really interesting, you know, because this solving for education, it's complex, right? It's this big complex system. There's all sorts of historical iniquities baked in, politics are baked in. So finding success can feel overwhelming or Sisyphean. And you talked about seeing progress in communities where there's this critical mass of committed leadership. Could you tell us more about how that gets started and what it looks like in the places that really drive you when you're looking, you're like, yes, they're getting it. Tell us more about what that is.
Yeah. Well, first of all, you know, I think I kind of fell into this, like the original idea of Teach for America and the kind of unifying idea of Teach for All But from the very start, the idea was, let's inspire a generation of leaders to put their energy in the arena of working with the most marginalized kids. And I thought it could make a real difference in the first 2 years people would commit to teach, but also thought that those 2 years would influence a generation, would change their priorities. I mean, if we could take all these future leaders and have their first 2 years be teaching in low-income communities instead of working on Wall Street, like, what would that do to our country's consciousness? But I don't think I could have understood exactly how it would play out. And over time, we've seen, and I think it's just really interesting to see this now playing out in 58 the world, because we see such similar effects. So you start realizing there's something in this that isn't just about any one context. You know, there have been a number of studies now in recent years that look at what happens to these teachers during the 2 years across several different countries. And what we see is that, in fact, you know, their DNA does change. I mean, their mindsets and beliefs and the potential of kids, their understanding of the nature of the problem and the solutions changes dramatically. Like, they come in thinking, all of them think the number one issue is funding and other technical solutions. And they come out thinking, this is a much more adaptive and complex set of solutions. And their priorities change. I mean, you know, they come in very unsuspecting, very few of them thinking they're going to put their career into education, but they come out, you know, more than 70% of them committed long-term, full-time to education, among other related kind of systemic issues. So we've learned that there's something in this experience that produces the kind of leaders we need. And what I've seen over time, and now in communities around the world, really, is that, you know, making a really intentional effort to cultivate that pipeline of leaders can make a real difference in communities. So I think about Dallas, you know, because Teach for America is pretty new in Dallas. We've only been there for 10 years or so. And when we started working there, Dallas was notorious for being among the very most stagnant urban systems, really in the country, let alone the state. Mm-hmm. And I think about what has gone on there over the last 10 years, certainly not only because of Teach for America, but it's just been a remarkable, you know, like, transformation, really. You know, I think 10 years ago, there were 40 schools that were deemed failing. Now that number's in the single digits. And it really is the fastest improving system in the state. And I think about what went into that. And it really was, you know, and you all know it better than I do from afar, but from what I can gather, this is an example of collective leadership. Meaning, this was about people at every level and across sectors, from the business community, educators at every level, and many others, exerting leadership to say, we are going to change things for kids. And I mean, certainly the Teach for America people have played a really significant role in that. You know, still there, you know, so we're 10 years in, there are 400 alumni who are still teaching, 40 school principals, including half of the principals of the Uplift and KIPP Charter School Network.
Yeah.
There are another 80 in positions of school leadership. And there are 75 of them working at the system level who have had such huge roles in shaping and advancing a lot of these major initiatives, from the Teacher Excellence Initiative to the Accelerating Campus Excellence Initiative to expanding pre-K, et cetera. You know, you just think about, like, you take all those Teach for America alumni out of the system, and it's hard to imagine where all of the energy and leadership that's contributed to that progress would have come from.
Wow, what a huge impact.
Yeah, I was just thinking, I get to work with so many core alums here in formal and informal ways, and someone started a nonprofit, I'm on their board. I mean, it's just there's something about the magic I always think about is the understanding of how important the proximity to the work is in terms of what you do beyond, and it's palpable with people. So I happily get to run into TFA alums up and down every part of the education spectrum. And it's always interesting, even people who at their core days are farther in the rearview mirror, you know, are still very connected to that proximity to the work and how it's changed what they do, which is sort of the a little bit of the magic. It's hard to bottle, but it's you know it when you see it for sure in people.
Yeah, it's really true. And I see it all over the world. It's just really interesting to talk with the alumni who have, you know, who have taught through this. I mean, whether they're in Dallas or like, you know, Dhaka, Bangladesh, they describe, like, if you just ask them, what are the biggest things you learned from your experience? You could almost, it's like the same movie playing in the discussions. Like they literally articulate that they became exposed to the magnitude of the issue and to the fact that it could be solved. And they came to see how complex the solution is. Like those are the big themes. And
yeah,
you know, that's what we need in our education leaders, people who know that we can solve the problem, who know that it's certainly not that the kids and the families don't have the potential, and who recognize that there's no one silver bullet solution, that we're going to need to come together and tackle this issue in its full complexity if we're going to have any hope of seeing really fundamental progress.
Yes.
And you touched on just there that you're also seeing folks in worldwide, not just here in the U.S. And so you talked about this a little bit at the Forum on Leadership. Could you just kind of reset for us and talk some now about how Teach for America grew and evolved, and then you founded Teach for All?
Yes. I mean, so I had my head down. I was focused fully on the U.S. and the very significant challenges that we still have here to ensure that all of the kids in our country have the chances they deserve. But something was in the water about 15 years ago. And I, within 1 year, had met 13 people from 13 countries, from India to Lebanon to Chile to China to the next place, who were just determined that something similar needed to happen in their countries. And so ultimately, that's what led to the launch of Teach for All, as a network of independent, locally led organizations in now 58 countries on every continent, you know, and growing. I mean, there are another 30 in the pipeline. And I really view the point of launching Teach for All as one of the most, I don't know, one of the most valuable, I guess, points in the trajectory of this whole thing, because we started moving so much more quickly once we had the global network, meaning like learning so much faster, because we just realized, I mean, it's kind of the same hearts, minds, and souls drawn to this work all around the world. And they're brilliant, deeply committed people, but rooted in very different and diverse contexts and cultures. And so there's such diversity of thought. And that's so powerful in ultimately coming, you know, fostering innovation and fostering learning.
One of the things for people who are listening who don't know, and Teach for All, you're not recruiting people in all these countries. You're a network that is sort of this very sophisticated learning community, really, around the world of people doing this. And we think about, one of our research projects is on a school leadership, and we're working with a cohort of 4 districts, and we've been sort of head down for several years working intensely with them, testing out some frameworks. And it's such rich, gratifying, and fast work. And I'm fast meaning like the learning is fast. And I wonder if you could just say a little bit about what that looks like, that learning that you're doing in Teach for All.
Yeah. So as you say, I mean, so there are these organizations around the world that, just like Teach for America in our country, in the US, you know, Teach for Nigeria is building a movement among its country's most promising leaders of all different backgrounds and asking them initially to commit 2 years to teach in underserved areas and then really cultivating their leadership. And really one of the most surprising things for me, because when I started this on the global journey, I was just telling myself, like, the whole world will be very different. I mean, I honestly was just I was very intimidated by the thought that, you know, I assumed we wouldn't have that much to offer, actually, to the people in India. I mean, which was one of the very first launches because of, you know, how many differences exist between the US and India. But as I got into it, I realized, and I think this has been such a collective learning across our network in these years, that the roots of the issues we're tackling are just eerily similar, meaning, you know, the forces that prevent the most marginalized kids in the world from having access to the chances they deserve, you know, they look very similar. Their circumstances, in fact, are far more similar to each other's across all these borders than they are to the more privileged kids in their countries. And at first that was really depressing because I honestly felt like, oh, we're just fighting the forces of gravity all over the world. I mean, we're all just sucked into this. And, but ultimately we realized the silver lining in all this is we could be sharing solutions, which we don't do in education. Like, what if we ultimately had a huge network of not only the staff members in these organizations, but teachers and the alumni who are, you know, in their government ministries and launching social enterprises and starting teacher development organizations, et cetera, who could all learn from each other across borders. We realized this could be the key to really accelerating progress all around the world. So I would say we're still, you know, kind of early in the journey of developing such a thriving network. We have 43 communities of practice, though, actually, among teachers and alumni in different interest areas. So we have all those folks who work in their ministries in the education policy community. And we've got people who are convinced that teacher development has to, is the core of the solution, who are in a community of practice. In this era of COVID, when we saw so many of our alumni drafted to be, take over the radio stations to keep learning going where that was the only option, we now have a community of practice among the radio station lesson producers so that they're all thinking together about how do we actually do this better so that kids do listen and do learn. So we've seen, you know, we have quite an effort going to, on the one hand, foster the connectivity among them, surface the insights from these communities, and orchestrate learning experiences that will make, that will enable many more practitioners across our network and beyond, you know, that will enable them to access those insights.
It's really exciting from, you know, just that sense of learning and possibility, because you're right, in our field in education, it's such a gap, and it's something that hasn't been organized thoughtfully in a way that serves educators who are in classrooms or leading schools or creating the ecosystem around them. And so I'm always excited when we see people who are like, their goal is like, wait, we're going to get smarter faster because this is hard and none of us can do it. None of us have the solution and just can sort of wall ourselves off to do it. So we're always excited to see what comes out of Teach for All, what you figured out, so the rest of us can to follow along.
And it's so fascinating too, because as you said, the problems at their core are so similar. Because I was looking at y'all's website, and it struck me. I was just overwhelmed by the problem immediately, because it would say, you know, in Japan, you know, one of the key issues is that kids don't feel like their teachers care about them. But then you go to another country, and it was that 50% of the kids or 60% of the kids are dropping out before they get to their second year of high school or whatever, and you look at that and you say, those are really different issues, yet at its core, they're really not, huh?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, I mean, we actually came together as a network and developed one theory of the problem. Like, why do we have this problem? And of course, there are nuances and differences from place to place, but ultimately we have the reality that the most disadvantaged kids, whether it's because of their gender or religion or caste or race or whatever it may be, just face a lot of extra challenges that other kids don't face, and particularly the challenges of poverty and all the stresses and trauma and such. And those kids show up to school systems that were never designed to meet their extra needs. And in fact, don't even have as many resources as the school systems of the more privileged kids. And then there's this whole prevailing ideology about the potential of kids in those groups who, you know, which kind of undergirds this whole cycle. And so that's what brings us all together as a network, is the recognition that there's no one thing that's going to solve this problem. We're going to need to have radical systemic change, actually. I mean, we need to change the very culture and mindset of our countries about the potential of kids. We need to, there are just so many elements of the issue. And what that means is we need a lot of leadership, because it's leadership that changes systems. And so this idea that we're coming together to develop collective leadership in our countries, and that those leaders need to be deeply locally rooted in local context and culture, but also globally informed by what we're learning and what's working in other places and what's proven possible in other places. I mean, that's really the purpose that brings us all together.
What have you learned about America through your work around, like, you started in America, went worldwide. Now, look, taking that lens and putting it back on America, I know, you know, President Bush talks about isolationism and protectionism being dangerous, and, you know, you're crossing borders a lot through these projects in that organization. What have you learned about America now that you've gone worldwide?
A couple of things come to mind. You know, I guess I've just seen how much we have to learn from the rest of the world. And what I've seen is that in other countries, I mean, a lot of people really look to the US and believe they have a lot to learn from the US and from each other. And I think we need to sort of recognize how much we have to learn from everyone else. I mean, I feel that far more from folks outside of the US than from folks inside the US. So that's one thing that comes to mind. I think as it relates to education, I guess my experience across the world has led me to feel that our focus here in the US is just exceedingly narrow. You know, there's such a growing recognition in many parts of the world that, you know, we need to be preparing students to navigate uncertainty and shape a better future. You know, navigate a changing economy on a path to meaningful careers, solve increasingly complex problems facing communities and countries. You know, people are really looking at where will the world be in, you know, 20, 25 years when this generation that's in schools today are adults, and yeah, it's and are very struck by the fact that, you know, if we want the world to be different, we need to focus on our classrooms. And so there's such a growing focus on a broad set of outcomes for kids. You know, how are we growing student agency and sense of responsibility? How are we developing the kind of problem solving skills and collaboration skills and ability to work across lines of difference? And, you know, just a broad set of outcomes that will be crucial if our kids are going to be able to shape a better future, and if any of our aspirations will be met. So I find myself just longing for the US to kind of wake up to that same realization, so that we step back from where we are right now, really in communities around the country, and ask ourselves, you know, what do we want to have be true for our country and our communities, and therefore for our young adults? And so what does that mean for what we should be working towards in our schools? I think we need to have that conversation in a way that we haven't.
It's really interesting that another research project that we've been trying to land, and it's just complex, right, to get at what you're describing, that what's available, what data is available or are available to help us understand in a state, if you're a governor, asking yourself, are my state's young people on track for a prosperous, self-determined future, right? If you're answering that question, and how do you know? Not just to say yes, because of course you want to give a positive statement about your state, but what actually do you have at hand to understand that and to measure and understand if your policy and resourcing and decision making would support that long-term vision when you have a shorter-term political cycle, and it takes very courageous, thoughtful leadership to navigate that. And it's been interesting to try to pull together that research in a way that would be meaningful to states, because I think that's the question, right? It's beyond just employment or graduation rates and how much more there is to it. And it's a really interesting question. We haven't quite landed it, of course, but it's interesting work to go deep into. Mm-hmm. The same reason you said.
What struck me through the No Child Left Behind era was that, you know, on the one hand, we had, you know, at the federal level, a real commitment to say this system needs to serve all kids and we need to make, you know, the welfare of every kid visible through data. And, you know, we made a bold commitment at the national level. And then what I saw and what we collectively saw happen as states essentially lowered their standards in order to be able to meet that federal bar. And as we all saw, I think the limitations of federal mandates to make things happen at the local level. I mean, I was just so struck by the fact that we're still not there as a country in terms of our commitment to our young people. And so what I've been mulling on ever since, and sort of what this global journey has led me to really reflect on, is what do we need to do to grow the commitment in our local communities to prioritize something different? And, you know, so as I think about the future in the US, I think to me, that's the central question. And I think we're in an era now, in light of all the disruption from the pandemic and all the unrest around the country, and the kind of soul searching in a way, that could make this the right time for real leaders at the local level to say, you know what, let's step up from our individual pursuits. And we want kids and parents and educators and employers and other concerned citizens to come together to really think together about what our aspirations are for our communities, for our country, and therefore what needs to be true for our young adults. And then what are the implications of that for our schools? Like, what is the purpose of education? And then we can reflect on, is what we're doing in our schools going to get us there? And I think we'll realize it's not. And we'll all realize that no matter what we were fighting for on whatever polarized end of the education, quote, reform spectrum, it is not going to be sufficient. And I think that could create the foundation for the kind of collaboration and commitment that we're going to need to see if we're going to have a truly the kind of transformation in education in this country that we're going to need if our country is going to have any hope of continuing to be, a thriving country.
Well said. Very well said. Wendy, we've got to let you go. I know you've got a really busy morning this morning, so we really appreciate the time and squeezing us into your schedule as you try and solve education, not just in the U.S., but worldwide. Thank you really so much.
So appreciate. No, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Well, we'll keep in touch soon and make sure we get you back for the next year's Forum on Leadership.
Perfect. All right.
Nice to see you.
Take care.
Yep. Bye.
Learn more about Teach for All at teachforall.org. You can also learn more about Teach for America at teachforamerica.org. And you can also watch the entire Bush Center Forum on Leadership at www.bushcenter.org/forum-on-leadership. If you enjoyed this episode of The Strategist, be sure to subscribe and tell a friend, and let us know what you think on Twitter at @TheBushCenter. Thanks for listening.